accession number 19815, reel 1.
Henry Foster, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Where was I born? York.
Which year was this?
1921.
You grow up and have your schooling at York?
Oh, no. My father and mother came to the West Riding, I think, to find work. I mean...
Whereabouts in the West Riding did they settle down then?
Well, Ossett and Dewsbury, they settled down. And I went to school at Ossett.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
Did you get a job?
Yes. I got a job for a week and they paid me 7 and 6 pence. And father says, well, for 7 and 6 pence you can come and work for me. That was my father. We had a small holding.
So were you doing small holding work when war was declared?
Yes, I was working for my father and helping a local farmer, you know, threshing and harvesting, you know, the old-fashioned way when war broke out.
Had you joined the TA before the
war? No. I volunteered for the army in June 1940. I was a volunteer.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on
Germany? I did, yes. We listened to it on the radio, yes.
And how did everybody feel about it?
Well, I can't remember people's feelings. No, I can't remember that. I think it was expected.
Before you joined the army, had the war affected you at all?
No, I don't think so, no. No. Because there'd been a... Well, they called it the Phony War. Nothing really happened apart from bombing, occasional bombing. I mean, the big bombing hadn't really started till 1940. It didn't start till 1940.
And did you say you volunteered for the army?
Yes, I volunteered.
Why did you do that?
Oh, I don't know. Thousands of young fellows my age at that time volunteered.
And which month did you volunteer?
I think it was June, early June.
In Ossett?
No, in Dewsbury. They had a recruiting centre in Dewsbury. And I got a shilling, the King's shilling, for volunteering.
What happened to you then?
I had to report to the Mount York, which was then and is now was a public school. And we were kitted out at the Mount. All our gear was given to us in a kit bag and that. And then we walked down to the racing stables at Dringhouses, which is about a mile outside York. And we were billeted in the racing stables. And we did our initial training on the Knavesmire, which is part of the race course, at the bottom end of the race course. We did our initial training there.
What was that like?
Well, I mean, I was a young fella. I enjoyed it, you know. It was a beautiful summer. Was 1940, one of the best summers, I think, and we lived outdoors, if you understand me. Most of the time it was a 7 day a week training, and we enjoyed it.
How did the people in charge of the training treat you?
Well, there were mostly old soldiers that trained us, people that had been in the army previously, and I think they'd all been recalled. I think they were all reserve, people that were on reserve, you know. Well, they didn't treat us badly. didn't treat us badly. We didn't have a lot of money. We'd 2 shillings a day. That was the pay. 14 shillings a week. And they gave you 10 shillings and kept 4 shillings to build, you know, in reserve for when you maybe went on leave or anything like that. But we lived on 10 shillings a week.
And after your basic training, what happened to you then?
Well, I went to a series of... I went to Clifton Aerodrome, which was all part of our training on the aerodrome defence. Now, the RAF then didn't have the RAF regiment, you see. The army guarded the aerodromes and that sort of thing. I mean, nowadays they have their own regiment as the RAF. Went to Clifton Aerodrome, went to Church Fenton Aerodrome, which at that time was one of the most modern, was Church Fenton, because it had only been opened about 2 years. We went to Wetherby Racecourse. I was billeted at Wetherby Racecourse Christmas 1940. And they actually, they had a race meeting. Christmas 1940, and we were living in the Tote buildings. And they actually turfed us out for the day while they had the race meeting.
Is this with the West Yorkshire Regiment?
Yes, I joined the West Yorkshire Regiment. I have a West Yorkshire number. My army number, anybody that was in the army in that time, if I say my number, which was 4544639, that was a West Yorkshire regimental number. People after me, they got general service numbers, because regimental numbers started to overlap, if you understand me.
And which battalion of the regiment were you with on airfield defence?
Well, that was the 70th battalion of the West Yorkshire Regiment.
Was this a young soldiers battalion?
A young soldiers battalion, that's right. Now, from there, I was transferred to the 11th Battalion, the West Yorkshire Regiment. That would be sometime in 1941. I couldn't tell you the date. And I joined them on the Isle of Wight. At that time, they were on coastal defence. And during the day, we were putting up anti-tank defences all round the Isle of Wight, on the beach, round the Isle of Wight. We were doing that during the day. And at night, we were manning the defences. Because at that time, 1941, there was a, you know, Juliet started bombing, and there was the invasion scare.
Did you personally think the Germans would invade?
Oh, it was generally accepted at the time that they would invade. Yes.
Did you think they would succeed if they did invade?
Well, we didn't have a lot of material, if you understand me. We had rifles and bayonets, and that was about what we had.
Was this a happy time for you on the Isle of Wight?
Oh, as I remember it, yes, yeah. Well, I mean, as I say, it was outside work again, you know, and we used to work all day, and then 3 or 4 nights a week we were on defence duty, you know. We actually were billeted in the barracks at Newport, near the prison. Now, after leaving the Isle of Wight, we went into Dorsetshire, somewhere near Blandford. I can't tell you the name of the place. And we lived in an old brewery. And there we were mobile defence. We had coaches parked behind, ready to go in case there was an invasion. And from there we went to Yeovil in Somerset. And we were same sort of duties there. Anti-invasion, you know. But I hadn't been there long, and I was put on a draft to go abroad. This was in, it'd be just before Christmas 1941. I got a week's leave, came home for the week, and had to report back to Formby Barracks near Liverpool. We were there a fortnight, and we got kitted out. Tropical kit we got, and yes, we're just there a fortnight. Now, something there happened. I think it, as I say, we've been there a fortnight, and some of the people, there were 50 of us, West Yorks, and one officer, and some of the people, they wrote home, and the first Saturday that we were there, they gave us the day off. And of course, we went to Southport or Liverpool, I just forget. Formby was on the electric line, which it is now. It was quite easy to get to Southport or Liverpool. And we kept asking how long we would be there. And of course, they didn't tell you. They didn't tell you anything in those days. So some of the people arranged on the second Saturday for their relations and their friends to come to Formby to see them. Right, the second Saturday morning, got Rivali as usual, got dressed, pack your kit, and before midday we were off. Now all those people that had arranged for their friends to come, they couldn't do anything about it. Before lunchtime we were off, and we went to Liverpool. Now that always sticks in my mind. I think it was shocking with that, you know.
What do you think was so shocking about it?
Well, I mean, these lads had arranged for their girlfriends and their mothers and fathers to come to see them, and they couldn't tell them, you see. And when they arrived, we'd gone. We went to Liverpool and we stayed overnight in some derelict houses up at Hightown. There were long rows of houses, they were all derelict, and we stayed there for the night. And on the Sunday morning, we were taken by truck to Liverpool. Now, I think actually we went to Birkenhead, because we went through the Mersey Tunnel. And I think we actually went to Birkenhead. And we got on a ship called the Bergens Fjord. It was a... No, beg your pardon. No, it wasn't the Bergens Fjord.
Well, don't worry, we'll probably come back to you later.
Yes. And we all embarked on this ship, and they were just fitting it out as a troop ship. There were the plumbers on, carpenters, and they were still actually working when we got on the Sunday morning. And everybody scribbled a bit of a note and wrote a letter, and we gave it to these men that were working the ships to post for us, you know, to say that we were off. Now, we didn't know where we were going. We laid up in the Mersey for 2 days before we sailed, and I knew where we were because we were off New Brighton Beach, because I'd once been to New Brighton as a kiddie. I knew it was New Brighton Beach. We were laid off there 2 days before we actually sailed. And then we joined a convoy somewhere north of Scotland, a big convoy. And now this is early January 1942 then. Still didn't know where we were going, but when we sailed and we got in this convoy, I should say there were about 90 ships. They did say at the time it was the biggest convoy that had sailed. Now the only way we knew where we were going, we got odd sights of the sun, and we were sailing west. Now it was a very slow convoy, 5, 6, 7 knots, no more, with a lot of empty oil tankers in the convoy, in ballast. And at that time they were very slow ships, were oil tankers. But anyway, we sailed west, and it was very, very rough. Very rough. Everybody were sick. And 3,500 troops on this ship, packed like sardines, only about a 15,000 ton boat, a Dutch East Indies boat it was, Dutch officered Javanese crew. Very rough. I were down on D deck, was a concrete floor, and you could stand and touch the top. We slept in hammocks, solid. And we slept, ate, and everything on that deck. And there was no air conditioning in those days on the ships. All there was a big canvas funnel down the hatch, you know, into the decks, bringing fresh air. It was like a big canvas funnel. Well, we sailed west for days and days and days, and then suddenly we woke up and we're coming more or less east again. And it was getting warmer. And after about a fortnight, 3 weeks, we finished up at Freetown on the west coast of Africa. And we didn't get off the ship there. They just took on water. Now, water on these ships, on troop ships, were very scarce. It was, drinking water was turned on for an hour at morning and an hour at the evening. That was the only time you could get fresh water to drink. All your ablutions and everything had to be done in salt water. There was no, with no canteen or anything like that. We to make our own enjoyment and things like that, you know. There were no facilities for... Anyway, the only thing you could buy cigarettes, and we could buy tins of pineapples. I think it must have had a cargo of pineapples on. Dutch East Indies boat, it probably come from. And the only cigarettes there were, I always remember, and they were South African cigarettes. And they were Cape to Cairo. That was the name of them. And it was pure Rhodesian tobacco, which was awful. Terrible tobacco. I remember, because we all smoked in those days, right? We left Freetown after 2 or 3 days, taking on water. And we sailed roughly west again. But this time it was hot, warm. And we were encouraged to strip off and sunbathe, get used to the sun, which we did. All our spare time was spent on the open deck, you know, stripped off to us, shorts, we had shorts, and there were no women on the ship. And that we were encouraged to do that, to get used to the sun. Anyway, we finished up at Cape Town. Half the troop ships apparently went round to Durban, but the ship I was on, we stopped at Cape Town. This was after about, it took us 6 weeks to get to Cape Town. We got shore leave at Cape Town. We had 2 days. They treated us, like gentlemen at Cape Town. When we came out of the docks, they were all lined up, the cars, the pictures up, in groups of, you know, 2, 3, 4, and they looked after us for the 2 days we were there. And the people I was with, they actually wrote to my mother and said that seen me and where I was, because all this time on the ship we weren't allowed to, there were no letters being sent, we weren't allowed to write. I mean, if you'd have written, you couldn't, they wouldn't accept them. And they actually wrote to my mother and said they'd seen me. And for the rest of the war, they used to send her a food parcel. Now, from there, I actually changed ship. We got on a Norwegian ship there, and called the Bergensfjord. It was a big three-funneler, right, a really old ship. But it was very fast, apparently. And from there, we went up to Port Tewfik at the bottom of the Suez Canal from there in this ship. And the rest of the convoy, as far as I know, went to India. But we finished up at Port Tewfik at the bottom of the Suez Canal. Now from there we went to what they call the Infantry Base Depot, which was on the shores of the Bitter Lakes. The Bitter Lakes is natural lakes that is part of the Suez Canal. And the Infantry Base Depot there. And we had 6 weeks there, acclimatising. It was where all the infantry went that were coming into the Middle East. And you had to be, you had to acclimatise there. You got, you know. And we, there again, we were told to enjoy the sun. We were, you know, strip off. And we did, what we did, we started off just walking, running and that in the sun in the morning in PT kit and, you know, and gradually built up to, at the finish, you had all your gear on your back, you know, your full equipment, rifle and all the lot. And we used to run up 2 big sand hills, and they were called the Big Flea and the Little Flea. And we used to finish up running up these and down in full gear. And then from there, I was sent to my regiment, along with, there was 50 of us and an officer. Oh, and while I was there, the afternoons used to be free, but there was nothing to do, if you understand me. It was bed down sort of thing, you know, you laid, put your blankets down. We lived in tents, slept on the floor. But I took the opportunity to learn to drive, because they were always coming round, any volunteers, anybody can drive. There was a huge shortage of drivers. You see, nobody could drive in those days. I mean, there weren't the cars on the street, same as there is today. They were always coming on. So I took the opportunity to learn to drive in the afternoons, in the bit of free time I was there. And it was just a matter of 2 or 3 of us getting in an old 1500 weight truck and driving down the side of the Suez Canal to a place called Ismailia, where there was a big canteen. And we used to drive down there, get a cup of tea and a bun, and then drive back. That was the extent of the training, but it just learnt you to, to drive this old 1500 weight. Now from there I was drafted and we were sent to the 2nd Battalion West Yorkshire Regiment. We went by rail from Ismailia up to as far as the railway went, which was a place called Halfaya Pass. We called it Halfaya Pass, the railway ended there. And we went up there. We didn't ride in carriages, we rode in goods vans, you know. And it took 2 or 3 days to get up there. But you only travel so far by this train, and then you come to a transit camp where they fed you. You know, you got off and they gave you a meal, and you got back on and you went somewhere, and then you slept at a place one night and then got back on the train. And we'll finish up at Halfaya Pass. And from there we were taken by truck, and I joined the regiment, the 2nd Battalion West Yorks, near Tobruk. That would be in May 1942, beginning of May. We were stationed on the perimeter at Tobruk, in defensive position of the battalion. Now, I joined the regiment was in the 5th Indian Division. And the West Yorks were in the 9th Indian Infantry Brigade of the 5th Indian Division. That was the 2nd Battalion West Yorks. They'd already been in Eritrea and Abyssinia previously in 1941. Now we were in these defensive positions on the on both sides of the El Adam Road, I remember, and it was a solid mass of barbed wire, 4 miles of it deep. I mean, the Germans had been there, the Italians had been there, the British had been there, and they'd all put wire down and mines, and you know, and we just took up. We were in a platoon position, and that's where we stayed. Just in that platoon position, food used to come up to us, and we got fed, and water was rationed. That was one thing that everybody missed. We were allowed 2 pints of water per day in your bottle. The regiment was allocated, actually, I think 8 pints to feed you and to supply you with drink. But you got 2 pints of water in your bottle. You could do what you liked with that. You could drink it when you got it, pour it over you. But you wouldn't get any more till the following day. Your main meal came up at night, which was bully stew. And we lived on bully beef, tinned cheese, tinned fish, biscuits, bread occasionally. And the water at Tobruk, now we'll go back to the water, it was terrible stuff. They actually said it was taken out of the Mediterranean and put through filters and issued to the troops. It was diabolical. If you make tea with it, you put your tin milk in, it used to go black. It turned it black. Now, maybe once a week, we were taken down to the harbour at Tobruk to bathe in the sea. That was the only way you could get your 2 pints. I mean, you tried to shave and keep yourself tidy, but 2 pints of water,